Hello, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. This is Series 3. This is the NIHR Senior Research Leader Series, and do press follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. Listen right until the end, where we'll host a summary with Professor Roxanne Crosby-Nwaebe, and do leave us a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, and we're here again with a new episode for our Senior Research Leader Series, and I am delighted to be joined by Connie Shearer-Zenoma, who is a Senior Project Manager from Bristol Health Partners, and obviously a NIHR Senior Research Leader. Connie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
And we're delighted to have this series of senior research leaders. And we know that everybody's got a slightly different experience, is doing slightly different things. So we're going to hear a little bit about you and what the award has meant for you. But you can't get away with the beginning question that everybody has to be asked. So tell us why you became a nurse and how you became a nurse.
I would say I never had any inspiration of becoming a nurse. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer. And so I came to this country 5 days short of my 21st birthday. And when I was looking for to do the access to law, it then meant I had to stay with my auntie Connie and my uncle. And I thought, what's the best way of getting away from staying at home with adults? So I ended up in Scotland, and that's how I ended up doing nursing, really trying to run away from my auntie and uncle. Yeah. They were really nice people, but I just didn't want adult control. Yeah. I was 21 now, so I was trying to be an adult, really. So yeah, that's how I ended up doing nursing. But later on in life, then I discovered that my auntie Connie was actually a healthcare assistant, that I never knew when I was growing up that she was a healthcare assistant, because she had always lived, she had lived in the UK since the 60s. So I never knew what she did. But yeah, so in the end, I ended up following up her footsteps in the end.
Marvellous. And you did a diploma in nursing. You told me, we had a brief chat, and you did a diploma in nursing. Where did you do that?
So I did it with Strathclyde University, but I was based at Bell College in Dumfries, okay. Scotland. Yeah.
And did you make the right decision? You glad you didn't go into law?
Absolutely, yes, because I would have made a ridiculously bad lawyer. but I think I've made a fantastic choice, because I absolutely love nursing. It is my soul. It's what I do and breathe.
I'm glad that was your answer, because as I said the question, I thought if she says no, I wish I'd done law, then this is going to be a very short episode. So where did you work as a nurse, and what was your speciality? What was your background when you first qualified?
So when I first qualified, my first hospital was Watford General, and that was a medical ward and care for elderly. And I absolutely loved it. And I was that nurse that did all the pressure ulcer dressings on a Saturday and curled all their hair to put them on the table to have their lunches on a Saturday. So absolutely loved it. Then we moved to Bristol, and that was our trying to get away from London, because coming from Scotland, London was just too fast for both of us. So we ended up in Bristol, which ended up being the middle ground for us, because I met my husband in Scotland when he was training as a nurse as well. So yeah. And then when I moved to Bristol, I started working in the orthopedic center at Southmead Hospital. And that's where I did most of my nursing until I went into research.
Marvellous. And I suppose we never asked the most important question from your origins. Where did you come from to come and live with your auntie and uncle? Where did you move from?
I came from Zimbabwe.
Okay, so Zimbabwe to a cold UK to an even colder Scotland.
Absolutely.
And then back to Watford and then to Bristol. So you were quite well travelled in a short period of time, weren't you, at one stage?
Absolutely. And I think people lie when they say you are acclimatized to the weather, because I went straight into Scotland, but still now I'm the coldest person in any given area that we are in. So I never really acclimatized after staying in Scotland for 3 years.
And your heart's in Bristol now, no doubt.
Absolutely, yeah.
And your role there as project manager, tell us a little bit, or senior project manager, tell us a little bit about that role at the moment.
So when I really applied for this senior project manager role, I was coming from a research nurse because I worked as a research nurse for 13 years. To me, when I applied for it, I wasn't really sure what it was all about. But what attracted me to Bristol Health Partners was what they did in terms of improving health access and health equality. So every project that they do are really driven by what the service users say and how we can best improve the lives of the people who live in Bristol, North Somerset, and South Gloucestershire. So all our projects are really based on lived experiences of the service users and how can we best improve their access? What do we do? So we literally work more with the community and people who use our services to make sure they have access and we can do something to improve their care when they use our services.
That sounds fantastic. So what we need to do then is take that, get you there from the start of that journey. So you've done a diploma, you've moved to Watford, you've got your first job. What attracted you to academia? Did you do well in your diploma? What made you sort of think you wanted to go down this research route? How did that come about?
So when the first thing that I did, so I ended up at one point in my life, I had three children under five. So I had twins and I had my first daughter and then followed by twins. So at one point in my life, I was a mother to three children under five. And I just wanted to prove that I just wasn't a mother and I was much more. So I ended up taking a master's degree, a distance learning master's degree with Cardiff University. And that was a master's in pain management. And I did a literature review into knee pain and management of that knee pain because I was on an elective orthopedic ward. When I finished that in 2011, they were advertising for a fixed term post on the Restore program. And the Restore program was all the research studies into orthopedic experiences under Professor Ashley Blom. So I ended up on that fixed post for 18 months, and I absolutely enjoyed what I was doing then. And that's what really kindled my love for research.
So did the master's in pain come before you became a research nurse?
Yes, so the master's in pain, as I said, I did it just to prove that I was more than a mother of three children who were under five at the point. So when I finished, they were a bit older. They had started to go to school, so that timing was perfect because it meant I could drop them in school and pick them up.
And I have to ask, were there outside influences making you feel like that, or was that you doing that for yourself? Did you feel like you needed to prove that you were more than just a mother, or was that to other people, or was that just coming from you? Was that internalized? You wanted to do that?
That was an intentional ambition. Like I wanted to bring myself value to where because as I said, I wanted to be a lawyer, so that's really ambitious. So for me now, I was just like, am I stuck? Am I just going to be a nurse or night shifts and coming back to be a mother? So I wanted something more to say to myself, I am more than a mother. I am more than a nurse. I can do more for myself. So that was just a self evaluation thing that I did for myself.
And I know that you're going to talk about the research delivery role and being a research nurse, but equally, and perhaps most importantly for this podcast, is you also have a master's in research. So you didn't just prove you were a mother and you could do a master's degree, you proved you're a mother and you were going to do two master's degrees. So what came first, the research nurse role or the master's in research?
So the research role came first because, as I said, I was then seconded to do this 18 months on the Restore program. And when I that secondment ended and I had to go back to the ward, they didn't have any vacancies on a night because I was a night nurse. So they asked me to do a bed manager role. I did it for 4 months. It was not for me. I really hated it. I tried to love the job and I take my hat off those people who do that job. But it just wasn't for me. And I begged them to put me back on night. So in the end, I had to work in French Hare Hospital, which was then a trauma orthopedic ward. And whilst I was there, I am a ward nurse. I still do bank nurse now. But for me to just be in a ward nurse at that point, I felt like, no, I want to do research. So I ended up phoning Helen Lewis and just said, anything, I will do anything for now because I'm just so desperate to come back to research. And she said, okay, 3 months, I've got 3 months fixed post in neurology research. And I said, I'll take it. And that ended up being a 12-year neurology journey. So, yeah. So
And
research delivery came first.
so you're, can I ask what year that was? And I'll explain why.
So I went into that fixed 3 months fixed post in 2014.
Okay. The reason I ask is because obviously if you've got a nurse going to somebody saying, I want to be involved in research, then I suppose now we would be hoping that there was a bit of a crossroads moment where people would be saying, well, there are a number of options. You know, you could go down the PhD route, you could go down the research delivery route, but it was only research delivery that was put your way. Is that right?
It was research delivery that I really wanted to do. So, because when I then worked on my fixed term with the Restore program, I really enjoyed the research activity. I really enjoyed being a research delivery nurse. So, it was really the delivery that I was interested in. But as I progressed in the delivery, I worked on a really big prostate cancer profile portfolio. And as a black nurse, I noticed that difference in this is prostate cancer studies and heavily prostate cancer portfolio. Why was I not seeing any black men in any of the prostate cancer studies that I was recruiting to? And I started then questioning that disproportionate in terms of my research participants. And I think one of the best recruitment that I ever did was recruiting 4 men to a prostate cancer trial out of the 130 men that I ended up recruiting to that trial. So that became so apparent to me that there was that discrepancy. And that's so when I went when I did my master's in research, it was a recommendation when I wanted to do a prostate cancer PhD. So University of Western I of England had a PhD that they were advertising and they wanted someone to do prostate cancer trials in it. And I applied because I really wanted to focus on why did we not have black men in prostate cancer trials. So that's why I applied for that PhD. Unfortunately, I didn't get that PhD, but the recommendation from the panel was I needed to do an MRes. So that's how I ended up doing an MRes with the support from Professor Prasad, who absolutely believed in my ability and my capabilities, and he was like my cheerleader all the way.
It's that I have a familiar tale to tell, actually. I went for a PhD at, interview would have been in 2008 or 2009, and didn't get the PhD, but was funded to do an MRes. So sometimes it's, and I wouldn't change that if I could go back, because I think that really helped me to understand what a PhD would involve. Have you felt the same with your MRes?
Absolutely. I think the skills that I then gained as an MRes, funny enough, I never used them in my delivery role, but they became so useful in my senior project manager role, which was really weird because, as I said, on paper, it didn't attract me because of its research. It attracted me because of the focus they have on reducing health inequalities. And mind you, I had started to have that there is a lot of inequalities in health. And me going into the senior project manager was after I had actually failed to get an NIHR fellowship for the clinical doctorate fellowship, where I wanted to look at what is the experience of trans people when they come into a very binary service, like a urology service, when they're coming for their prostate cancer care. What is their experience, and how best can we equip our healthcare professionals to look after them well to make sure that the care is equitable?
What a really novel and interesting question.
Absolutely. It's still in my bag. I was just never funded to do it at that time. And as you say, I think it's every, I think from the failure of me getting to that PhD, which led me to the MRes, and then when I failed to get the funding for the clinical doctorate fellowship, I ended up being a senior project manager, which opened so many doors that I never expected would open. So it's like this pattern where my failure led me to something else that actually developed me personally that I never expected.
So do you feel in the research delivery role, and I know you've been able to advance in it in that senior project manager role, what do you feel are the advancements? So if people, because people listening to this perhaps won't fully understand the role of what we used to call research nurse, and we still do sometimes, but what are the advancements, do you think, if people are in a research delivery role as nurses? What opportunities are there for them?
I think now the world is your oyster. You can go everywhere and anywhere you want it to be. Some people choose to be an academic. And at that point in my life, because I had said to myself I was going to be an academic, and the definition that I gave myself about being an academic was I needed to have a PhD. So I think I literally held myself in a box and not allowed myself to explore other options because I defined a clinical academic as needed to have the PhD. So therefore everything then I then did was geared towards me having that PhD regardless. And after COVID, and I had been put on the ward, we were deployed on the ward, and I'd worked clinically and saw what was happening there and all the inequalities that then came to the surface during that time. Me exploring other options that were not just the PhD options became actually okay, I can actually flourish. So when I came back from the wards, that's when I started looking with a focus of inequality, other than me being a clinical academic with a focus on PhD. So I think it's now it's anything you can do, whatever you want to do, without really just streamlining yourself to one thing. There are so many pathways that research nurses can go now, and it all lies in what interest do you have? What is that particular niche interest that you have from your delivery role? Because as we progress in our delivery role, we then begin to develop some particular interest that you then want to focus on. So it, for me, it's that inclusion, that everything, the accessibility of our healthcare or of our social care, the inclusion and everything to do with it. That for me, that's where my focus is now. Because if we don't make our health services, our social care equitable and accessible, who are we doing it for? Everything that we do, we are just probably just doing it for ourselves if you're not doing it for our patients and the public that needs that access.
What a lovely sentiment and a lovely way of viewing it. I suppose the next question for me then, for you, is how did the senior research leader application come about? Because obviously that's another sort of string to your bow. That's something else on your CV. That's more leadership at a more, perhaps a broader and wider level than just Bristol. You're part of a community now of senior research leaders. How did that come about for you?
So for me, as I said to you, it all really started with that. I am a research nurse in a prostate cancer, really large profile, but my participants are not very diverse. I don't have that diverse that is representative of the disease area that I am looking at. So it's looking into why do we not have this? And I remember the first black man I had in my prostate cancer trial, which was preempt, he looked at me and he said, "I'm so glad I can speak to a black nurse because you get me. You get my cultural fears. You get what I mean by if I say to you, I don't feel like I'm a man, you get it because being a man means a lot in our culture. And there's a lot that contributed. But when you've had prostate cancer, there's a lot that comes with the prostate cancer surgery, like the sexual dysfunction and things like that." So when he came and saw me, he was like, "Oh my God, I'm so glad I've talking to a blackness because you get me." So that was really like, wow. So there is need for more of us out there. There is need for more of us to do this research so that our participants can relate to us. So my priorities for the senior research leader what is really to try and work and mentor Black and Asian nurses so that we have a diverse research workforce. And that is my priority for the senior research leader. Because if we are not, if we continue not to have a representative workforce, we will continue to have the inequalities because people are not relating to the people that are recruiting them to these trials.
And did you have the support to go for the award? Did you feel like you had the backing to go for it? And has it been something that your employer has been able to really facilitate for you? Because it should protect 2 days of your time. Has that been so?
It is protecting 2 days of my time, and my manager at the moment, he couldn't do anything more. So my Bristol Health partner manager is my supporter, and he is literally supporting me all the way, and he's amazing, Ollie. And he was the one that says, like, "You shouldn't have any reason why you shouldn't go for this program." So yeah.
So, are you cohort 2 like me, I believe?
Yeah,
I remember because
yes.
that's where we first met, isn't it? So I remember that you are just over a year in, like I am,
Yes.
to this award. Has it been everything you thought it would be? Have you been able? I mean, you can't make huge changes overnight, but do you feel like you're making a difference? Are you striving to do what you aim to do?
I think what it has given me is the confidence. Like when I am in spaces, I now have the confidence to say, okay, I can influence. What can I do to influence in this space that I am now? Because I am now seen as a senior research leader. So it's that confidence that it gives you that almost like I have the right to be here. As a black nurse, we always sort of have some hurdles, but in having that badge, it just gives you that confidence that okay, you have the right to be here. This is a personal award. You've earned it on your own merit. So you can utilize it how you want it, want to utilize it. So it has given me that confidence to step into spaces and influence spaces the way I need to influence it for the benefit of our patients and our participants in research.
Yeah, it feels good to say it, doesn't it, when you introduce yourself? And I think it gives you strength on paper as well. And what that does is open doors a little bit. So have you been able to make inroads in your achievements about supporting Black and Asian nurses?
Yes, so for some it's patchy in areas. There are some areas where, like most of my research career, I did it in one hospital in Bristol, and at that part of Bristol, they get to refer people to me because they know me, they know my strength, they know my passion. So it's now just trying to increase that profile that people know that I'm here and I can help them. I can support them. I may never walk the same journey as them, but I understand the journey that they're walking and the barriers that they might be facing in terms of their career progression.
And have you felt networked in this award in the way that, although it's probably raised your profile in your own area and where you work and given you opportunity, do you feel networked in the way that you've been able to sort of work with your cohort or other cohorts and have been able to sort of keep any relationships going professionally with other people on the program?
Absolutely, is that the networks are really good. As you're saying, we are only just starting our second year, but the networks that we've already been able to create and the collaborations that we have already been able to create have been amazing. And I wouldn't have done that if I wasn't on this program. So I have been able to make some strides, and as part of the RCN as well, I've now had that confidence to say, I can take on the roles as an RCN learning rep. I can take on the roles because I have time to do it. I have time to each time we have got a study day going on. I say, oh, can I speak about research? And the just being confident to do that and just being confident to be in those spaces and network. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great and lovely to hear. So you're not at the halfway point yet. What do you hope to have achieved? Have you set yourself any goals for the end? And when I say the end, it's not the end as in the end. It's a 3-year award. So as you get to the close of the 3 years, what will be your if you like success criteria for yourself?
I think what I've been able to do so far is just being able to have that time to mentor, because I have met a couple of Black nurses now who came to this country. Most of them would have trained abroad and came to this country loving research, but the opportunities have never presented themselves. And I was quite saddened, like 4 months ago, and I met a lady, she now works in the community, and she said, when I came into this country, all I wanted to do was research, but the opportunities were not there. And now I feel like my research fire had died. And because now people know me in the region and they know my priorities, they had referred it to me. And it has been such a lovely journey to walk with her to say, you can still do it. We can still rekindle that research fire. There's no reason why you can't. So it's just having that opportunity to work with people, and looking at how many people that have now been referred to me that were almost despairing in terms of research, and almost like research doesn't happen for Black nurses, and it's not a profession that we can continue to carry forward as Black nurses, but it is a profession that we can continue to carry forward. We've got our own Professor Roxanne. You know, she is the role model that we, when you see someone like that in senior post and you see someone on stages like that, you can relate and you can say, actually, it's possible. I remember when I spoke at the UK CRF, I was presenting the Protected Characteristics project that I've just finished, where we're looking at the protected characteristics of research participants in the BNSSG area. And one lady in the con it was a congregation of about 500, 600 people. And she came to me and she said, thank you for standing up there because I could see myself in you. And she was from Zambia. So it's always really good because you never know who you're influencing when you're when you're on a platform, and seeing more and more people who look like you just gives you that confidence that it's possible, I can do it.
I mean, your message is so selfless that it's lovely to hear because it's all about what you're doing for other people, clinically, particularly with the patients with prostate cancer, but equally for the workforce and for your own discipline. So it sounds very selfless, but if I ask you to be selfish, what are your ambition? What ambitions are left for Connie? Is that PhD still the dream?
I think the PhD, I think I'm now in a sense where I'm thinking if it happens, it will happen. If it doesn't happen, it's not the end of me. I can still make it. I can still make a career that I'll be proud of with or without the PhD.
Yeah, but equally, I think your candidacy, your ability as a candidate to be somebody that looks like an outstanding candidate for a PhD can only ever be improved by having this award, can't it?
Absolutely.
That's the value of it. Connie, it's been lovely to talk to you. I have to say, usually I listen back to these episodes and think, right, what will be the quote that I will use for the title of the episode? But I don't think I'm ever going to get anybody else that will ever say to me, "I begged them to put me back on tonight's." I'm sure that has to be the quote because nobody else ever has begged to be put back on nights. They felt like a punishment when I was a clinical nurse.
Absolutely, but that's what I was comfortable
There
in
you
doing,
are.
other than bed management.
I've scribbled that down. Shall we agree that one? Are you happy with that as a quote?
Absolutely.
Marvelous. And people will listen because they think, what's that got to do with research? And then they'll find out. And then they find out.
Absolutely.
Connie, that's been wonderful. So thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Connie. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello and welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. We are here again with episode 4 of the Senior Research Leader series. And as ever, I welcome back Roxanne.
Hello, Andrew. Lovely to see you again and hear you again.
And our listeners will probably thinking this has been a mighty break over the year, Roxanne, but life gets in the way and we're both here now. That's all we need to say, isn't it?
Definitely. Life gets in the way, but research always goes on.
Absolutely. And the week, I think we've probably a good time to advertise and say the Senior Research Leader program goes on as well.
I know the Senior Research Leader Program Cohort 4 is open to nurses, midwives, and allied health care professionals, allied health professionals. There are 14 in the first tranche of the program, and we are opening on the 3rd of September, and we will have our webinar on the 2nd of September. So please look out for those links on the NIHR website.
Perfect, and that now gives me the that now puts me under pressure. I've got to have this out there before the 1st of September now, so that's good. You've put me on the spot now. We'll get that out there so people can hear about the new cohort and the webinar opportunity. So it's delightful, and brilliant that there's a fourth cohort, and hopefully what we're doing with this series is really giving a different perspective of different people across the cohorts to just to say the value of the program, aren't we?
Absolutely. And whereas we emphasize on the program that we have senior research leaders to enable research capacity and capability building in their own organizations, it's been really great to hear the impact of the program on the individuals that are on this program.
So no, that's no better lead-in than Connie. What an episode. I've met Connie a couple of times face to face, but you don't learn these things about people until you suddenly have to interview them for a podcast. But what an inspirational lady, and what a delight to talk to.
Connie is absolutely brilliant, and she's one of our mega stars. I mean, you all are mega stars, but she's one of our mega stars. And the work that she's doing in her own little area is also amazing.
And I don't want to give away things that you've said in the past, but I have interviewed you in the past, so you are in an earlier series. She did remind me of you a little bit in the beginning when she was talking about law. She got this different desire because I'm thinking you were going to be a brain surgeon or something like that, weren't you?
Yeah. But life happens.
But law, she wanted. If we, I don't want to go from start to end straight away, but she clearly is in the right place. She's doing the right thing. She had this desire to do law. She arrived in chilly, cold Scotland, so she emigrated. She arrived here, not knowing really that she wanted to be a nurse, and what a difference she's made.
I know, but the thing is, she went to Scotland because she wanted to be a rebel, and she froze. But she came out, and I think one of the best quotes at the beginning of the interview was she said, "Nursing, it is my soul and it is what I do and breathe." What a lovely quote
Yeah.
for us as nurses.
We'll
I think
talk
that's how we all feel.
quotes because this was an episode where you could pull out several quotes, couldn't you? But
No.
I mean, I think this is your series really, and I this is about the people that really you lead across the cohorts. But I found her really inspirational. I think, the way that she's taken everything on board, if we jump a lot of the early nursing. discussion, but that need to sort of have to do a master's degree to develop the career she wanted, and then do a master's degree to try and get herself on into a research role. Nothing held her back, did it? Three children under five, moving from Scotland to London to Bristol. I mean, nothing's held her back. She's inspirational, I think, from a female perspective, from a nursing perspective, and no doubt you'll agree culturally as well, because nothing's really stood in her way, has it?
Nothing stood in her way. One thing I'd want to bring out for our listeners as well is that she made a comment saying that she wanted to prove that she was more than a mother and more than a nurse. And this is nothing on Connie at all. It's just to sit back and think, how does society define motherhood and nursing? That inspirational mother of three kids under five, I don't know how many of us would go through that, would think that she had to prove she was more than and undertake this. And to be able to get into the mindset to be able to do it. And then she spoke about, kids going to school and then doing night shifts to be able to get this master's in pain management underway. Absolutely extraordinary. And it just speaks to the person that she is.
I couldn't agree more. You mentioned the night shifts, and I mentioned the night shifts. So, but we've agreed, because we really want to try and inspire people from the research perspective. We won't. I won't go with. I begged them to put me back on nights, but it did make me chuckle, because I would have begged people not to put me on nights. But I think the thing I wanted to really lean to was, quite a unique and a brave role for somebody to champion prostate cancer, but then also recognize inequalities in prostate cancer. I thought, because she's not a black male nurse, she's a female nurse, and that does make a difference, particularly. And to champion, a male cause, and to look at to notice in a research delivery role that actually there wasn't true representation there, I think was very ahead of the game. She was a natural leader.
Definitely. And that also speaks into the role that she has now because in her organization, they're all about co-creation of services to address health inequalities. And she was attracted by that ethos. And so that just speaks to her values. But yeah, just going back to the point about the type of research she was doing and noticing that in prostate cancer research, there weren't a lot of Black male representatives. And she also mentioned that, the patient was relieved when he walked in to see her. Stating that, okay, you would understand me. And outside of this conversation, I know we had a big discussion about the differences between different cultures in about prostate, the values about prostate cancer. In some cultures, men are hypersexualized and seen as the role model and the breadwinner, and then having to have this condition where probably they remove your prostate if it's not radiotherapy. And you are, for want of a better word, wetting yourself, unable to have bladder control, erectile dysfunction. And for we also spoke about in certain cultures, there were really eminent individuals who said in public that they'd rather die than have a prostate exam. So that kind of explains the differences and the nuances in culture and cultural perceptions of different conditions. And for Connie to be able to understand it from a cultural perspective, almost, because she's a Black woman, not a Black man, but recognize it and then recognize how it was affecting her patients and lack of diversity within the recruitment sample, that was extraordinary. And she's continued to, wanting to work in that space and not just prostate cancer, she's moved that passion onto other areas as well.
She really, what she's done is every time she's taken a new role or a new focus, she's maximized her potential in each of the areas, hasn't she? So she, I think this award was perfect for her, because the one thing she probably didn't recognize was her own value. Until
Agreed.
she got this, the some of the things, and I think we said, didn't we? And this is a quote that you picked up. The SRL gave me the confidence to influence, and she perhaps always had that, but perhaps you don't carry that very well unless you feel validated. And this award has validated her, really understanding her leadership and her research skills.
Yes. She also mentioned that she went for a PhD to do this discrepancy in recruitment of Black males to prostate cancer trials. And even though she didn't get that, she was then advised to do the MRes. But all of these things has helped her on her journey. And with this confidence to influence, as the program director, I am super thrilled. And I hope all the SRLs now feel that way. We would hope that we would be in a world where your skills speak for itself, but we know that some of these things are barriers in our organizations. But that she's able to look within herself and on the program understand this is who I am, this is what I can contribute, and the NIHR, being the big organization that it is, has given me the stamp of approval. So now I can go forward and do what I need to do. And I'm really proud of her for being able to recognize that and do that.
And one thing I'll say about Connie meeting her face to face, she's also so joyful and positive and full of smiles, and that goes a long way in life, doesn't it? I don't want to say there are people in life there are people in life that can sometimes suck the mood out of the room. She's the absolute opposite, isn't she? She lights up
She
a room.
is. She's a little bright spark, Connie. And she is not the person to probably always be out there or the first one to raise their hands to say something. But when she does come in, it's always someone with very reflective space. And, she's currently on our inclusion group. Our NIHR Nursing Midwifery and AHP office have this inclusion group because we recognize that there's lack of diversity probably across our programs, and we needed to be the ones to address that. And we got a group of leaders, not all SRLs, around a table to decide, okay, how do we make sure all of our processes maximize, applicants coming in, they're from diverse backgrounds, not just ethnicity, but neurodivergence and across the board. How do we make sure that we address this within our program? So therefore, we'll be able to increase capacity and capability across everything that we do. And Connie is part of that. And as I said, she always listens to what everybody else has to say and always brings a unique perspective that gets you thinking, okay, how did I, it's so obvious. How did I even forget that? She's an absolute asset.
And I think I can say this, you can't say this as we end the episode, but I have to highlight that she raised the fact that you're a role model. So, that must be nice to hear. Although you're probably more embarrassed than flattered, it's that's nice to hear. If you've inspired people like Connie inspires the next generation. That's a lovely knock-on effect, and that says a lot about you. So you should credit yourself for that as well.
Yeah, can we skip over
Yeah,
that
well, I didn't have her arm up her back. I didn't reach out for that. That was something that she wanted to say openly and honestly how she felt about
Yeah.
you. So well done to you for inspiring people like Connie.
Thank you. And well done to Connie for in continuously inspiring me. I mean, she also spoke about one of her projects for her SRL program within her trust is to try and get more Black and Asian nurses into research because she has these career conversations with individuals. And, they spoke about coming from overseas into the UK, wanting to do research. And because of the lack of available opportunity, mainly lack of available opportunities, they were all just pushed back. And, now she said that nurse has said she's lost her fire. What an absolute travesty that you've lost your fire and your passion for research. And she's doing a huge piece of work in her organization with those particular nurses. To get them into the research arena on the research ladder. And it's all built on her passion for health inequalities, her passion for diversity. So, hats off to her and well done, Connie. And she's also influencing me and the inclusion group and the NIHR from a national perspective to look again at our programs and thinking, who are we not reaching? Who do we need to put some more work into? Who do we need to develop this program for? Who do we need? What mechanisms do we need to put in place, processes, any support to get individuals from these different communities into the research space? Because, as she said very, very rightly, if we have a diverse research workforce, our participants are more likely to get involved because they can relate to our experiences.
Absolutely. I think it's such wisdom in some of the things that she's been saying, and that's come from her own observations, which says it all because she's giving back based on them now, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah,
Absolutely brilliant, Connie.
I'm delighted she's got the award, and I think that probably she won't get her head through the door by the time she's heard this, Roxanne. So we will draw that too, but she's very deserving of that praise. So as for episode four, Roxanne, thank you for your time. We will continue to encourage people like Connie and work together as peers. So I'm delighted that we've been able to do the episode with her. And Roxanne, thanks for your time again.
Thank you. Well done, Connie.
Thank you. Bye bye.